Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
When I say shitty shark movies, Sharknadoes is just like one little portion of shitty shark movies.
It's body horror. It's extreme body horror for the time.
Stephen, it's like she has thighs to steal.
Everyone's also trying to get whatever's on Skinamax that night.
And that was a nightmare for Fergal.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, a show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast and the band Subtastics.
And Fergal Amayo.
This is Fergal Amayo of Gotham Knight Comics, where we get our nerd on, and I am fully prepared to fight Zoonoids. Let's do this.
And our guest host this evening is James Dean.
Hey, everybody. James here. I'm an indie filmmaker and writer, and I love all kinds of films, including bad ones.
Whoa, we are not saying the Guyver is a bad one. Maybe it didn't age as good as we'd like it to age. My most recent watching tells me that, but this cannot be a bad movie.
Well, why don't we jump into it? Tonight's movie is 1991's The Guyver. Now, at this point, I normally tell you who's based upon the top billing, based upon the credits. And it's funny because the top billing credits for this movie are not who you would expect would be those top billing credits. So I'm just going to give you the ones that are actual, and we'll have a discussion later on about that. Greg Pak, J.J. Walker, and Peter Spellos, I guess how you say his name. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple actors which should be mentioned, which we'll get to those in a bit. Directed by Screaming Mad George and Stephen Wang.
They are here among us now. Nothing less than the fate of the human race is at stake when this girl meets this boy.
I don't know what the hell that is, and I'm not sure I want to find out.
The most lethal weapon ever conceived. A one-of-a-kind prototype.
I am the Guyver.
James, you picked this movie. Why did you pick this classic?
Well, okay, you sent me a list, and I think I originally said Old Boy, but someone else had selected that one. But I had watched this one when I was a kid, and I remembered it being a lot of fun. But it also has been probably close to 30 years since I've seen it. So I thought, let's try it. Let's see if it holds up to what it was like. And I guess we're about to get into that. But it was something I had a lot of fun with as a kid. The monsters, I remember them being fun. I remember the fights being fun. I just had fun with it as a kid. So I think I wanted to revisit that and see if it was still there.
Yeah, and I think when you picked Old Boy, we had just finished up recording that, and that was a nightmare for Fergal. So,
Jesus. That movie still scars me. That particular version of it scars me. Maybe I just missed that because I watched the American version, and that one scarred me. But I am going to echo James. This was a fun movie all the way through. Has been when you first see it. First off, J.J. Walker. Let that sit there for a minute. You got J.J. Walker in there. You got Mark Hamill, so... This is when, was this before or after he wielded the lightsaber?
Well after. So before jumping in the movie and our thoughts on it, guys, have any of you read the original manga for this?
Not at all.
Yeah, no, I once this was out, I went back and, you know, checked what it was and saw a little bit of the, like, the anime versions of this, but I hadn't read it in full before, and only for the prep for this episode.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was going to happen. I did not read the manga for this either. But for your viewing, James, obviously you've seen this movie, and Fergal, yeah, you kind of mentioned it, but Jeremy, was this your first viewing of it?
It is. I don't know how I hadn't seen it before. I 100% knew of this movie. I 100% even remember picking up a box of this on some video rental store at some point, because if you look up online, and you mentioned kind of how, you know, all the top billed people aren't who you'd expect, on the American release of this in the box, mm-hmm, it's clearly marked Mark Hamill, the Guyver. And you're like, okay, he's going to be like the main character. And we'll get into it. He's not really. But not just that. In one of the versions of the box, you see half of the mask and then half of Mark Hamill's face, implying that he is, in fact, the main character of the movie on the box for the movie.
The greatest marketing twist ever. Now, for me, I had never seen this movie. I've heard of it. Many people have told me to go and watch this movie. They keep recommending it to me. But yeah, I actually, until James, you forced me to watch this thing, I had not seen it. And I'm
forced.
Thankful
I'm hearing
did.
These words that just do not sit well with me. Forced. This was an honor, Chris. You should be like, this was amazing. First off, tell me you wouldn't want that armor. I know I would.
Well, Fergal, before we jump into it, since none of us have read the manga, can you give us a little bit of history on the manga?
Well, this is written by a gentleman by the name of Yoshika. I'm going to completely slaughter it. Yoshika Tayaka. He had a pen name as well. This was his big breakthrough book. 1985, 1986, kind of ran for a long time. 32 volumes of this manga, multiple different adaptions, an animated movie, a Guyver 1, a Guyver 2. This thing spawned off some hit.
Quick spoiler warning for our listeners. If this is the first time you're joining us, just a heads up. We'll be discussing the plot of this. I think it's about a 30-year-old movie at this point. And discuss some elements of the story that might be considered spoilers. But to be very honest with you, if you've watched any Power Rangers, you've seen this movie. So consider yourself warned. So, James, why don't you walk us through the story of this film?
First up, I just need to say, I'm going to make you crawl. I'm going to make you sing. Because I want that Gaiven Jiven thing, boy. I had to say that early on.
That was great.
Okay, a young man discovers a mechanical device that merges with his body, biomechanical, turning him into a cyborg superhero. When strange creatures start appearing, trying to take the device back, he begins to uncover a secret plot to genetically engineer terrifying monsters. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it, you know.
It's Power Rangers.
Yeah, it really
no,
is.
No, it is not Power Rangers. It's the Guyver.
I'd say it's closer to Ultraman. If you're going to pick something, Ultraman would be what I'd throw out there as well.
Oh, come on. You can put that fight scene. And we'll get the scenes in a bit. But you can put that one fight scene of them in the warehouse, turn off the volume, and turn on the Power Rangers theme song. It works. It works. So why do we jump into the characters of this movie? Like I said, the billing for this movie is wrong, to say the least. I think they were going by first time you're on the screen billing for the credits. But there's no top billing for it. So there are a few different characters. Which is a character that you enjoy the most?
I like the Guyver. And just because James brought it to the forefront, may I just talk about J.J. Walker's ability to play as Zoonoid while still retaining the qualities of J.J. Walker? I just think that alone was an Oscar performance. You know how there are characters who overact the shit out of a movie? Let's take Legend, for instance. The Big Red, he overacted the shit out of that movie. Well, so did J.J. Walker.
And you're right, he was J.J. Walker with prosthetics on or not. He really was. And what was actually interesting to me was the last line of the movie, he used his catchphrase, dynamite, but he says it wrong. Did you notice that?
Yes. Well, I think it was on purpose to not be completely over the top for what
Yeah,
it was,
I was afraid, but. Like, was there a copyright problem? Like, he didn't say dynamite. He has to say, like, dynamite.
It didn't feel like to me they were super worried about copyright issues or just blatantly. Like the movie starts with a screen crawl. They are fully embracing and trying to pull in anyone from the Star Wars fandom with this.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
it's not even, it's blatant. It's
the only way it could be worse was like episode 4 at the beginning of the crawl.
That would have been perfect.
As our listeners knows, I hate exposition dumps like that. And it really, you don't really, any of that crawl you don't need to enjoy this movie. You really don't need that.
Well, I think the big voice at the beginning sets up what you're getting ready to walk into. You know, this is one of those things where I watched this on my phone as I was typing out emails today. it was sitting right in front of my computer while I was working on it. And there were just parts of it where that whole beginning of the thing, and then it goes right to Segagawa, and it was like, there's the Guyver. There it goes. It just jumps right to the whole thing. So you don't have to explain
that. Yeah, I think that crawl was really had filler to add to the runtime, because it's less than 90 minutes, even with that 2 to 3 minute crawl. Actually, any of the monsters, what are they called again? Zoonoids?
Zoonoids.
Yeah. Which was your favorite Zoonoid?
I don't even know the name of the one. The one looked kind of like if it was a dog, but just like half of a dog. You see it kind of walking back and forth in the kind of end scene. Other than that, all of the others are fine. But I like that one because I was like, I don't even know what you're aiming for, but I love it.
I liked the big bad, but I also really appreciated, I think it was the doctor that got turned into a Zoonoid that still had the tie.
Yeah, the tie yes. Glasses.
Yeah, that was good. By the way, quick fun fact, and Chris, I'm stealing this one from you. Dr. East was named specifically, Jeffrey Combs picked that role because it was exact opposite of Herbert West, who actually stars in one of my favorite horror movies. James, I know you all appreciate this, Reanimator 1. Two, they're all phenomenal. They just really take it to a whole other level of cheesy ass horror.
Wasn't sure exactly how much overlap there was going to be with what the kind of films that I watch and love and what you all love, because I only listened, you know, full disclaimer, to one episode, so like I wasn't 100% sure. But you bring it up, Reanimator, you know, of course, David Gale, he was in Reanimator, he's in this, he's the big bad. Like, I love that. I think there's gonna be a lot to talk about, and I think we're gonna have fun with it.
I really think they went to a B horror movie like expo or a convention and just started, we need you, because you have Michael Berryman in this movie. By the way, I like his character design. It really felt like a giant gremlin.
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence because, you know, you mentioned this is directed by Screaming Mad George and Steve Wang, and then produced by Brian Usna, who is the producer of Reanimator. He's the writer and director of Bride of the Reanimator. He was, you know, for Society, I don't know if any of you have seen Society, but that's another one. He was the director for that. They're all kind of this body horror sort of extreme kind of practical special effects sort of movies. This fits right in with that, and all those same actors would come from that same circle. So it's all like greatest hits of these 80s horror movies in this movie, and I love it.
Actually, it's funny. Speaking of creature design, J.J. Walkers, my daughter watched this movie with me, and her first thought was, he's the wish version of Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
it's so funny because I watched the film twice, but after that, I wanted to kind of watch a couple like YouTube videos on people discussing it just to see if there was anything I missed, or especially if there was any background information that I wasn't aware of. And the one person in particular brought up Jar Jar Binks for J.J. Walker. So yeah, your daughter's onto something. I think other people feel the same way.
Now, we kind of hinted at Mark Hamill is in this movie. Do you think his role was necessary at all?
Yes. He was a detective. He's the one that said, great place for a mirror. Come on.
He wasn't actually a detective in the movie. He was an agent from the CIA.
Yes, that was like giving away your job. I don't understand how that would work.
Yeah, I mean, he's the worst secret agent ever. I mean, that mustache. He was basically Luke Skywalker pretending not to be Luke Skywalker. But yeah, it was funny. He's hiding in that room, and somehow he doesn't notice the mirror, but the hero does.
He's like, oh, I'm interrupting. Sorry, I'll go. Didn't realize this was a three-way party.
Which is even funnier because he was at the hero was at the crime scene, seeing them talking around all the police cars. Yet now he's jealous of the fact that she's talking to.
Well, that's because he's got the Guyver suit on. I think the Guyver's talking to him. Like, what is this shit?
So as a kid, and even rewatching it, because I forgot so much about the film, to be honest with you. After the initial, I guess, a third of the way in, where Jack Armstrong, Sean Barker, the character of Sean Barker, once he kind of falls originally. I kind of in my head, both this time and as a kid, thought Mark Hamill was going to take up the guy. I thought he was going to become the Guyver. And, you know, again, the poster, the VHS cover, you know, having his face as part of it. And I was like, oh, it's coming. It's coming. I mean, it never did. But I think they really heavily leaned on that, trying to get people in. And I think as a kid, it did disappoint me. Now, I think at some point, it kind of dawned on me, oh, yeah, that's not what happens in this movie at all.
It's interesting too. My daughter watched this movie with me, and at the end, when Sean Barker transforms from the Guyver back to himself, and he's sitting there, she asked, "Did they CGI Mark Hamill to look younger?" I was like, no, this is well before that technology even existed.
Did anyone watch the, I think it was a Blu-ray. There's actually an R-rated version of this, which I did not watch.
Was he naked? Because, I mean, I'm assuming this movie can't get R-rated.
It's 4 minutes longer. That is true. It's 4 minutes longer, but I have no idea what it's about. I did not see it.
There's supposed to be quite a bit more gore, everything's kind of extended in that way, which would make sense with Brian Yuzna and, or, you know, like you'd, like, I think Jeremy was saying with, you know, everything he's done, everything he's been a part of, like, think about Reanimator or Society. Oh my God. You know, that's a pretty goopy film, you know, it's pretty gross.
That's an understatement, yeah. But yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so I could see how there would be a longer cut. I kind of wish I'd have watched that as well, but I don't have access to it. So I just didn't know if any of you had watched it.
No, there's actually, it's funny, there's a scene where Dr. Segaway, the doctor who has top billing and dies 5 minutes into the film.
Tegagawa, I think was his name. Yes, Surgeon Tegagawa.
Michael Berryman shows up. And he's holding him. And the doctor goes, it's you. And then it pans over. You see, it's Michael. And then I said, it's you. Because, you know, I was excited. And I didn't realize he was in this movie.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of moments like that in this film where I feel like they're talking directly to the audience.
Oh, yeah.
They know what they're making.
There's a scene that you're not quite sure what happens. This woman starts screaming. And I'm like, oh, that's Linnea Quigley that's screaming for no reason. And it's because they're breaking into some other horror movie set where she's the scream queen in the movie, which is all, you know, it knows exactly what it's referencing. It's not taking itself too seriously. But at the same time, it's also not just comedy, because that would be unenjoyable. It's that kind of weird balance, the same kind of balance with Society, honestly, where it's funny, kind of gross, kind of, you know, kind of as a story to tell as well, and it keeps you interested.
I have not seen this movie, Society. I've seen Reanimator 1 and 2. It's one of my favorite all-around movies, but is Society in the same vein as Reanimator, or is it in the same vein as this?
It is in its own box. There's not much else like Society. It's body horror. It's extreme body horror for the time. I mean, it's not torture porn, but it's like, you got to see it. You got to see it yourself, and then you'll be like, why did you tell me to watch this? Don't watch it with your kid. That's what I would say.
Well, see, somebody told me to do that with Cemetery Man, and I'm still having struggles on that one.
Yeah, for our listening audience, the face Fergal's making with that description was quite on point. Given that the billing is all messed up, who would you put in your top three that should have been a top billing for this movie?
Jack Armstrong, for yeah, sure.
Definitely. I think he did a pretty good job for Guyver.
I would definitely put Mark Hamill. I mean, you have to, from like a producing standpoint. There's no way around not putting him in the top three. I don't care if he had a 5-minute cameo. He would always get a top three.
Yeah, I also think the guy who played in Jeffrey Coombs, and I think you round out the other one with the other guy who played with
David Gale. Yeah, David Gale. Yeah, I think.
And if you want to add a little bottom, you can put Merriman in there just because he was in Weird Science.
So you're telling me J.J. Walker should not be number two?
Well, J.J. Walker, J.J. Walker gets in there. J.J. Walker's a surprise cast member. He's like Blade. You didn't expect him to come walking through the door.
I think we need to see more J.J. Walker show up in just random cameos in movies.
Oh, he's on LA Insurance if you haven't. Kind of rewind some old commercials. He comes on those.
I feel like he was on one of the so my buddy and I, we love like shitty shark movies, and I feel like I saw him in one of those somewhere, but I don't know. I mean, so when I say shitty shark movies, Sharknados is just like one little portion of shitty shark movies.
But it encompasses so many shitty shark movies.
There's a lot. There's a lot more than you think.
There's probably hundreds at least, yeah.
And I have actually found a shitty shark movie that's a comic book movie. I'm hoping that gets on our agenda one day.
Comic book? Is it Jeff the Shark? Because I sold those at my store, and that was shitty.
It's based on a South American comic. The movie came out, I think, last year.
Boy.
Our listeners are trying to go on Google right now, trying to figure out what it was. I'll save it for later. So let's jump into the plot a little bit. I think this movie, there are a lot of great characters, but I think the majority of this movie is not about sort of a character arc or anything like that. It's really just about the monsters and what they're doing and the scenes we're seeing them. What was one of your top scenes from this movie?
I mean, for me, it's really hard to pick a scene. I like certain aspects of scenes. I think that the final fight is impressive. It's not impressive by today's standards, but when you put all the pieces together and know what they did to create it, the miniatures and maybe stop motion, but definitely miniatures mixed in with just creative camera angles, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoy the transformations and how they're shot and how they show them. I don't want to jump too far ahead because I feel like I'll be taking all of everybody's.
You're definitely taking all our juice. I'm just gonna leave it with the. I'm gonna leave it when he turns into Guyver. I think that's where we're gonna stop it right there.
It's honestly the movie for me goes from like, okay, this is so cheesy and I'm having fun with it, but it's so fucking cheesy, to like, holy shit, that was such a really, that's like a really cool transition, or as someone's changing into a monster or a Zoonoid. They did a really good job with that. And like when I tried to transplant myself back 30 years ago, it was absolutely perfect. You know, just the way they implemented the transitions and some of the fights. Some of the fights are lackluster, but it is what it is. You know, I mean,
for essentially being guys in rubber suits, it actually moves really well. Like I was surprised at how not Bach, like, you know, you see even some of the older Godzilla stuff and it's like, oh, they just are like running into each other and it, like there's some slow motion throws and they zoom in on like a hand to get something. But no, these are like actual pretty good fights, even in these ridiculous suits.
And these are amazing suits. I mean, Jeremy, you and I were on another show talking about TMNT 3.
Oh, yeah.
This is miles from there. This might be as good as TMNT 1 when it comes to these prosthetics.
No, I think they're better. I think they're more interesting, too. You've got a lot more going on. I think the Guyver suit specifically has a lot to it. Like, it doesn't look hard and hard to move. It looks very, very slim, but still looks really good.
Isn't this during a time when horror was really making a prosthetic-driven comeback, like really just trying to make more realistic prosthetics?
Personally, I would say yes. I think the 80s were the golden era of that. This was, I think, 91, if I remember correctly. So you're kind of on the tail end of that, but it's well before CGI was being used as heavily as it is today. So yeah, I think it's still kind of going strong in that era. And I think this kind of movie just leans into it so much. I'm trying to remember what the exact term was. Is it tokusatsu? Again, I probably said that wrong, but it is, let's see. It's a Japanese term for a live-action film or television program that makes heavy use of practical special effects. I had to read that from my notes because I was never going to remember that term. When I had posted about the movie originally, when I watched it the first time a few weeks ago, someone had brought up, oh, I love all of these, and then they said tokusatsu films, and I'm like, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about, man. So I was, you know, because I'm not afraid to say when I don't know something. So I had to look it up, and it's interesting that there's a term just for that kind of movie in Japanese. You know, it feels like it feels like a live action cartoon. So much about it lends itself to that. The sound design, the fights, just so much. Yeah.
Back to the scenes real fast. That the first fight scene when the Guyver learns he's the Guyver, he has his first transformation. I do like I think it really tells a lot, sort of the humor of this movie, because when he puts in his Aikido stance to get ready to fight the gangsters, they all go in the exact same stance at the exact same moment, as if on cue. At that moment, you know what you're getting into with this movie.
Well, in that scene during the fight, when he sees the reflection of himself and he's like, oh my God, what am I, or whatever, that's pulled directly from the original manga, which is pretty neat. His first appearance, he does the same thing, but he's like, he sees his reflection, freaks out, doesn't know what it is, and when he freaks out, he screams, and the suit goes away. It's almost exactly the same. There was a lot of, they pulled a lot from the source material, even though it's not based in Japan. It does have a lot of other, you know, licenses taken so that it made more sense for the time frame where it was filmed, but it's still, there's a lot of, like, nods to the original source material.
Well, to the quality of the special effects, too, in that scene where he transforms for the first time, when he, like, smashes that disc on his face, and the goo comes out, my daughter actually, you know, gasped in that moment. She watches real horror movies, you know, that comes out recently, better special effects. So to have it had that kind of effect on someone, a teenager, 30 years later, that's a good sign.
I would guess, you have special effects artists that are directing the film. You have Brian Yuzna, who's always leaned heavily into it. I think that is such a strong point for the film. And not just in the use of practical effects, but like you said, how effective it is still 30 years later, you know? Yeah, I think that really goes a long way.
The first transformation for Guyver, you see when it's like this thing covers him up and it's almost like a blob sort of, and then you see like eyes come out of it. It's all very graphic, but in a great way. Like, I love the transformations in this. Both the transformation into Guyver, and then also later on, we've already said there's going to be spoilers, the Guyver dies at some point in combat. That whole scene's great. It's not animation, but like the regeneration, I guess, of the Guyver, the way that's all explained. I loved all those
little effects. The reanimator.
They were the reanimator of the Guyver. Those are all really cool effects. I really enjoyed those still.
I am so bad at keeping on topic, so I apologize. I wanna say one thing about when he's like reborn. Did anyone else notice that for about 6 or 7 seconds of the score, I went back and re-listened to it like 8 times. Because it's his elbow blade that pops out, and it's kind of reminiscent of a shark fin, that mm-hmm. the score... Okay, good, good.
Yes,
the
yes.
score kind of takes on the Jaws theme for like 5 to 6 seconds, and I...
Did it.
I laughed my ass off. I was like, that is so great.
These guys knew what they were making, and they weren't going for anything better than what they're going for. And James, you sort of hit on it. The fact you have special effects artists directing this movie, it's kind of like Fergal. Remember we did Atomic Blonde a little while back, and it's directed by stunt coordinators, and you get an amazing stunt related movie. And I think that's true of this as well. These stunt guys do weird, wacky stuff, so they've got a good sense of humor about it, and they're making a movie that they know it's not going to be Shakespeare. It's not going to be some amazing thing, but they have fun with what they have, and they did an amazing job with what little money they had for it. The budget at the time was $3 million.
You know, it didn't get favorable reviews, not like Guyver 2, but it still has maintained a pretty strong cult following. You can find a lot of subreddits on about this.
Did Guyver 2 get worse reviews or better reviews?
Better reviews.
Okay,
Better because it was gorier, because it hewed more to the manga, and you've got those manga folks get kind of hardcore about their material.
Oh, for sure. I honestly, after choosing the movie, I was a little concerned. I was like, "Shit, I've never read the mangas. I think I've read one manga in my entire life. I'm not a huge comic book guy. I collected the comic cards as a kid, so." But you know, like, so I was like, "Oh man, I don't want to like do this movie like any kind of disjustice, you know? Like, I don't wanna..." Just taking it as a film and not knowing a whole lot about the manga, I kind of wonder, or I question, if this could be done in a serious manner, how much would it work? You know, if it was just like really buttoned up, kind of like Dark Knight, like Christopher Nolan style, maybe not with that budget, but I don't know if it would work very well. I mean, I feel like it being such a fun ride does so much for this style of film.
Yeah, I was actually asked that question, you guys, about remakes, and this movie obviously can't bring back all these people anymore for it. But should they remake it? And should they do a dark, gritty version of it? Could you imagine how that would look and what it would do well?
Well, see, I think it could, but I like the tone of this. I wouldn't want it to change the tone. No, I like that kind of funny.
No, this movie, for every person on this phone and that would actually listen to this episode and be like, yeah, I get where these guys come from, is all in the same age bracket. We hurt unnecessarily, and we love shit like this. This is the stuff we grew up on. This is kind of how we formed our opinions. And to Jeremy's point, why would you want to change this shit?
I did not see this when I was a kid. I only saw this 7 hours ago.
But you're hanging out with three very cool guys that did. So it does more than...
Yeah, but they went home already.
Jeremy, I figured I'd let you take that one, my friend. just based on your proximity to Chris, I figured you're going to hop on that one. He knows cool when he sees it. It's all sitting right here.
I think this movie was actually probably didn't hit the audience it should have hit if it didn't focus on the director and the producer and just the people behind it, as opposed to, you know, I thought this was, up until we watched it for now, like, oh yeah, it's like a live action anime thing. I'll enjoy it, I'm sure. But if I would have known, oh no, this is from the folks who made you Reanimator and Society and everything, I would have rushed out to see this like day one. Like, this is exactly for that audience, and it also happens to be based on this other sci-fi anime property.
Yeah, I think the audience didn't know what they're getting when they got this movie. I was reading some reviews around that time, and the biggest fault they gave it was, it's too campy. And now, looking back, like, that's the point of it. It's supposed to be campy.
Yeah, that's where so much of the joy, if in my experience, came from, was that it is campy, you know? One thing that I absolutely loved about this viewing, for me, is that when I watched it originally, I didn't know who any of these actors were, because I was probably like 11 or 12 and I hadn't seen most of the movies that I absolutely loved today, like Reanimator or like even The Hills Have anything with any of these actors, honestly.
Exactly.
And now that I was recognizing them left and right, and I just didn't even know they were in it. Peter Spellos, I don't know if you guys are familiar with like Sorority House Massacre 2 or Hard to Die. Like, just a fun character actor. He just passed away last year, actually. you know, just like recognizing, and then like the Linnea Quigley's real quick cameo. Like for me, that was fun, like experiencing all these things. And I knew I watched it as a kid. I didn't know who any of these people were. And now that I do, it was just, it added another layer of enjoyment to me.
Who's the lady wrestler? Who is the lady wrestler that was so annoyed?
Oh, she was a stunt woman. She's been a stunt woman for multiple shows before this. And that's what her main career is about, is just doing stunts. She was in a couple of other shows as well. I think she was on a Star Trek once or a.
She's American. She looks like she's an American Ninja Warrior.
She was a wrestling movie as an actress, but most of her, I looked through her whole filmography. She's mainly a stunt coordinator.
She definitely looks like she has thighs to steel. Sorry. I just felt like that needed to be added in there. Keep that in the deep cut.
Actually, one thing is funny too is, you know, the scene between her and Michael Berryman about the, where they're in a car and they're talking about, we'll go to Brazil. Mm-hmm. All that was ad-libbed.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
And his reaction to her saying, let's still go shopping. That was his true reaction. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm talking about going to Brazil. The other scene that was really ad-lib was actually going back to when he when he hands him the briefcase, the big bad, the briefcase that has the Guyver unit in it, but it's actually been swapped out for a toaster. That whole scene of how he reacts to the toaster is all ad-libbed as well. The anger he's showing from it, what he does with the toaster, like that's all ad-libbed.
Really? That's him going at.
They told him, when you open it and it's not the Guyver, just act the way you want to act.
Well, that's what they did. They went to a sci-fi Comic-Con, got a bunch of great actors that were taking photos, like, I'd give you a lot of drugs if you do this movie, and they all went and did it.
It is really interesting that, like, that little bit of background information, and that they're like, just act how you want to act. Like, there was really no direction, it sounds like.
I really think what it feels like to me is these guys who special effects, someone said, here's $3 million, go have a blast. Here's an IP nobody knows about. Just go have some fun.
You know, the one thing I can definitely say that I think they did a great job with is that I feel like when someone specializes in something and then pivots to directing, they concentrate so much on whatever that one thing is that often it just becomes about that.
Right.
You know? Yes. And I don't feel like that was the case with this. I know that they really do. What I mean by that is they don't linger on the shots too long. And I feel I've seen, especially in the indie realm, people who have started off with practical effects and then went over to directing, they definitely linger too long. It's just, you know, and I get it. I love gore. I love splatstick, like Brain Dead and Evil Dead 2 are two of my favorite movies of all time. So I love, you know, if people are slipping around on the blood because there's that much that's been sprayed about, that's my kind of movie usually. But also, if you just keep the camera on that shot for too long, it doesn't work, you know? And I feel like they didn't do that here. They kind of kept it on what they needed to keep it on just long enough to make it effective. And so I think they did a good job with that. I can see, kind of back to your point, though, how maybe they didn't do as much directing of the actor.
But I think if you're trying to make a movie that's that campy feel, right? I mean, something like the 60s Batman show, something like that, you don't need to focus that much on the acting. It's better to get, like, you're an actor. We've seen what you do before. We've worked with you before. Just right. Go crazy with this. Like, you're going to know it's not the Guyver when you open the box up. React how you feel like reacting. And if they don't like it, they can always just refilm it, right? But I bet they probably are like, perfect. Go to the next thing.
There's a lot when you're casting someone, you know, based on what they've done and what you've seen them do in the past, what they're going to bring to what you're making, right? So I think you're absolutely right about that. I think the saying goes around that like casting is like 90% of directing. And it really is. It's, you can't, unless you're dealing with the very top tier and all these prosthetics and all these things, you're not going to have someone change their voice and you're not going to have someone change greatly their appearance to become a different character. You know, most of us aren't working with Tom Hanks or, you know, someone of that caliber. And so, you know, like you said, just bringing them in and they knew what they had to offer and what they had done before and the working relationship. I think that's exactly what it was.
So this movie clocks in just under 90 minutes. I think it's like 88 minutes speed-wise. How'd it go? Fast, slow, in between?
I think it paced perfect. I think it was perfect. I, this is one of those movies that you can sit down and watch, get through 90 minutes, not even see 90 minutes pass.
I think the pacing was fine. I don't think it was slow at all. I think whenever they needed to throw in something, it was either a joke or an action sequence or a transformation. And I think they paced it really well. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about, this isn't a superhero, but we've had superhero, they're origin movies, and some of them take a long time to get where they're going. This did not. It started fast. You know, I would compare it to, we did fairly recently, we did Green Lantern, right? Which was fine, but that's a very similar backstory. There's an alien thing that makes a guy have an outfit, whatever, it becomes a superhero. Sure. That felt like it was the slowest movie on earth for parts of it. Where this, I did. I sat through it in one sitting and I was like, oh, that was great. Good job. I enjoyed that. I didn't need all the crawl thing at the beginning gives you a little bit of backstory if you need it, but you don't need a lot because it doesn't need a ton of explanation. It's just go, and I loved it.
Chris, you'd brought up like a remake, and I was just thinking, I wonder if something like a sequel would even be better by today's standards. And what I thought about was the new Street Trash movie. I don't know if you all are familiar with Street Trash. Ryan Kruger, who made Fried Berry, which was a really like psychedelic alien mental fuckfest. I mean, it's pretty crazy. But he just finished, and I think it's just about to be released, a new Street Trash film. And talk about gooey. It's fucking gooey. I mean, like, it has a guy that melts into a toilet. But it wasn't a remake. It was a sequel. And it just came out, like, 40 years later. I feel like a sequel to Guyver might do better. But I don't know, again, going back to that, like, the tone. I feel like no matter what, you're kind of fucked. Because if you go campy, kind of like it was originally, you struggle with alienating audiences. And if you go too serious, you also would kind of, the people that really loved the original, they would be scratching their head like, why is this so serious? I kind of want more of that fun, goofy flavor, I think. I that came up in my head.
No, I think you're right, too. The problem with a sequel, in my mind, would be just that. It's like, they want the same tone. People go to sequels because they want some more of the same stuff.
Yeah.
Slightly different flavor. You know, they had vanilla before, now vanilla bean, French vanilla. They want a slightly different version of it, but they want the same thing. I don't know if there's enough audience to support that kind of movie in today's market. Now, if it was another small budget movie, if someone said, here's $6 million, go make this thing, it could probably make its money back.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it coming out with a $50 million movie and making its money back.
Yeah, well, and again, the fact that the sequel to this anyway was a little more direct to adaptation to the source material, and it was a little more serious, and I guess it was better received. Maybe we're in the minority, right? Maybe it would do better as a $50 million straightforward action movie with a few jokes here and there, because that's what people want, but not this kind of level of camp. I would, but am I the target audience anymore? I don't think I am.
And waiting 10, 15, 20 years, once this wave of superhero films starts to kind of maybe die down or just subside and space out a little bit, with release dates, so it's not every 6 months or 3 months. That might be a more opportune time to try something also like that, really. Because now I think it would just get buried and people would laugh it off.
Oh, yeah. You would have to definitely come out as sort of a sleeper comic book movie where you won't realize it's based on a comic. Many, many movies like that, like Atomic Blonde, do very well. They're based upon a comic, but people really don't know that until they're actually either at the film or find out from an interview later on.
I didn't know it was from a comic until I saw it as one of your episodes.
See, I'm not going to lie to you. I just thought you put the guy in because it was an awesome-ass movie. I did not know there was a comic behind it.
As our comic historian, I'm highly disappointed, Fergal.
It is okay. I will take said disappointment. I knew you were going to come with that, and I feel really confident in my position. It's a badass movie.
I do feel bad, Fergal. I think the past three or four movies we've had have been really outside your wheelhouse.
My wheelhouse is pretty broad, too. I had a lot of brothers growing up, so we had a massive unchecked DVD, our video rental card that we used to go to. I watched Blood Diner. First you greet him, then you eat him. Like, there's nothing I haven't seen. And James is laughing because he's like, that's on my shelf right now. Like, that's a Thursday night view. Like, I've literally burned through so many horror movies. It's amazing. And I still, this one, didn't know it was a comic book. It's okay. And Cemetery Man, sweet mother. Have you seen Cemetery Man, James?
I saw it earlier this year. I want to say one thing to counter Chris. For all of his disappointment in you, I have nothing but positive love and vibes for you.
Of course.
Your comment about the she's tits in Cemetery.
Of course. I believe that was an iconic line. Yet another one that I brought to the table. I feel really good about that. So, okay. Like, literally best thing about that.
They were real nice.
They were the best. They were just the absolute best. You could frame those and put those as a wall. They would bring down a bad day every day.
If we can get a cast mold for you, Fergal, just put that on your shelf.
That's an extra gift, guys. Just think about it. We're heading into Christmas season. If you like the show and you want to subscribe, put an extra gift out there.
And just send it to the P.O. box. this movie being so small and being how old it is, I don't have really sort of interesting sort of what could have been for it, except for one thing. They were looking at Steve Baldwin for the lead. What do you want to see that movie?
As the lead in Mark Hamill's place? Or
no, as the Guyver. As the Guyver.
I think the answer to that is no in both cases.
No, yeah. It's the guy. Isn't this the guy who played in Gymkhana? Am I being too bold by saying this guy did another white man martial arts movie? American Ninja? I'm just saying, because there were a lot of those in the 90s. Completely culturally misappropriated ninja movies.
When you said American Ninja, I was thinking Beverly Hills Ninja, and I'm like, no, that was Chris Farley. How can you mix those guys up?
Chris Farley wasn't a ninja. He was Kung Fu Panda. He was Poe. We just didn't appreciate the humor at the time.
For this movie as a whole, guys, what did you love about it? What could they have done better?
I think we need to give J.J. Walker a teeny bit more screen time.
I feel like it's the opposite. Maybe they should have gave him a teeny bit less screen time.
I would agree with that.
I'm on the contrarian side of that agreement.
I would love to see his rap album released.
Yeah.
Ah, in Zoonoid form. That would be a perfect Christmas album, and I would buy it too. I'd put that shit on my Facebook page.
My daughter was getting down to some of the things he was putting down.
Certain people transcend, and that's J.J. Walker.
So it's funny that you brought him up too, because I was actually wondering, like, was this like the intro where he was trying to make a rap career or something? I can find nothing about it, but that would have been hilarious if this was him trying to break into that.
I'm sure it was him trying to pay his rent, so he did a great job here.
Well, in all fairness to J.J., we all grew up around the same time frame, and we saw many, many of our Saturday and Monday shows, Tuesday shows, trying to pay rent with very differing degrees.
If JJ was the best and the worst, what else was the best and the worst of this movie?
The Guyver uniform. I just thought that was awesome. And I thought that transformation for Mark Hamill, guys, nobody's talked about it. The Mark Hamill transformation was some of the coolest. Like, you know, for putting him in that 5-minute movie, his was like, where did that come from?
Because he had such a limited time in the BAFTA tank.
Yeah.
Pulled him out of it.
And the guy's like, oh, he wasn't in the soup long enough. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. That's what
it looked like. It was a cool transformation, but they did nicely position the Guyver right there in the middle of him, so you couldn't see the center of him being transformed, just the edges.
Hey, it was fine. It looked good. It was effective, too.
Yeah, and I think that just lends itself to, like, how you have to be creative when you don't have, you know, $100 million or, you know, double the amount of shoot days. Like, sometimes you have to lean into those kinds of things. And they did that a lot in this. Like, and if they wouldn't have thought that through and knew in advance how they were going to approach it, it just would have looked like crap, you know? It really would have. And they knew that, I think, you know, and that's why they approached it that way.
Oh, they definitely knew. There's certain spots where the camera, like, pans with them being not transformed, and all of a sudden they zoomed on their clothing, and all of a sudden, boom, they're transformed. Like, cuts like that made it work.
Yeah.
That's how to James' point, that's how you have to do it when you have, like, shoestring budgets. But, you know, the thing I'll take a laugh at, now that we're all at a certain age, we can go back and look at these.
You keep bringing up that up, Virgil, about our age, man. I mean, are you, like, having a midlife crisis that we need to know about?
There's a crisis always. But here's the thing I say. as we go through these particular, and this is just how my mind operates, like, why I wouldn't be in a woods, why I wouldn't be the lone guy camping, why I wouldn't beam down in a red shirt. There are certain things that just come to mind. When they're transforming, doesn't it feel like you can set a stopwatch and take a long jog and get away from them? Doesn't it feel like you can just be like, okay, I've got at least 5 minutes before you're fully formed?
It's not just that. There's a part at the end, I didn't make a note of this, but I definitely in my head thought that exact same thought when she has the Guyver, I can't remember what it's called, but like that ball.
The eyeball.
Yeah. When she has it in her hand, the David Gale's like, oh no. Pause, 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 pause. Yeah, no, it was very cartoon. I felt like that was one of those moments where I felt like I was watching a live action cartoon. Which, again, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's like the scene where Mark Hamill's being pinned to the ground by that dog-like creature, and she walks past it, sort of scurries by, picks up a microscope, walks back again,
and
winds up her punch, and hits him upside the head, and you hear the tree falling sound as it falls over, which I thought was just perfect.
Well, and that whole run up to that point, it was almost like the cartoon thing where you see them run by and then it follows them. And then they run the other direction and it follows them. And it's just in the background that's going on while you're watching the rest of the scene. I loved it.
Yeah, there's one part where that happens where they go into like a pair of doors and then they run back out and the elephant one's chasing them. The cut right there is slightly off and the doors shift just oh so slightly at that moment. But beyond that, yeah, it's like Scooby-Doo. Just watching running across the screen back and forth being chased by the ghost. For me, normally, I'm really big on character arcs, and this movie has no character arcs.
No.
But I think a character arc would have ruined it. It's like what it brought to the table was just it felt like a bunch of people just having a lot of fun with a lot of money with their prosthetics. And that's really about it. The plot is not heavy. There's not a big twist in this movie other than the fact that Mark Hamill is not the Guyver. And that's just because of marketing.
It does make it a little more difficult to discuss because, like you said, there's no character arcs really, and there isn't really much plot. It's almost something you have to kind of experience. You know, us talking about it kind of only goes so far. So I would, you know, I know we're maybe not quite there yet, but I would highly recommend anyone checking this out. And you're going to know within the first 10 or 15 minutes if you're going to be able to stick around for the remaining 75 minutes. Because it's not going to change. The tone does not change. Yeah.
In fact, it only gets more of it.
Right.
So I guess that's a good segue. So should people go out and find this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely you can find it, which is a tough one to find. This is not available on any streaming service regularly right now. You've got to kind of hunt it down. But it's well worth the hunt.
Oh, wait a minute, my friend. I'm going to have to change that.
Unless
one.
You pay for it. It's not like on a Netflix streaming.
I think you can buy it.
It's not for free. Yes, for but free. On Google... On YouTube, it's currently available at $2.99, $3.99 if you want the HD version.
Oh, okay.
Or you could have it fall off the back of a truck.
Or you could.
That's how I did it. I did it that way.
Like a mysterious box that has a jump. And it could be
I found it in a red lunchbox. I found it in a red lunchbox and watched it. It was great.
Do you have the dots in the back of your neck to prove that, Jeremy?
No, they're just scars from being a dumb kid. But yes, I have those too.
I did like the fact that they try to play that these things have been around for a long time as vampires and werewolves. Yeah. And that, I've never seen a werewolf look like those things, except for maybe the red one. I did like that them trying to connect it to a greater universe.
Well, the whole story is about these units have been around. There's actually three Guyver units in the comic. The Dark, you know, there's an animated movie that also came out as well, Dark Image Entertainment. The other comic kind of focuses on multiple Guyver units. So it's like, you know, in the Dark Guyver, in the sequel that's made to this movie, Guyver, which is a completely different Sean Parker, by the way, goes after an anti-Guyver, a Guyver plus a Zoonite.
Huh.
Yeah. So it is a completely different tone between movies.
Now, I think people should go find this movie. It's cheesy. It's campy. Don't go into it thinking it's some serious movie. Push through it. I mean, it's not meant to be, you know, I'm going to go learn something about myself. It's not going to take me on a journey where I'm going to discover some new fact about who I am and what I need to be in my life. No. You're going to go. You're going to have a lot of fun. Enjoy it. I watched it twice in one day. It's a quick watch. And it's both times were fun. At no point was like, this thing just needs to get over. But don't go into it expecting it to be some amazing, life-changing movie. Just go have a little bit of fun with it. It's lighthearted. It's supposed to be lighthearted. And the fact that Mark Hamill has a mustache should be more than enough reasons to go watch this movie.
He already had it for Body Bags, so he kept it.
I just watched Body Bags for the first time. And I could have swore, I could have swore he had it in that too, but that was around the same time, yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, how would you rate this movie?
I'd give this a solid Guyver thumb up. I really, honestly, as a kid, who wouldn't have wanted this uniform? There was a point in your life where this would come in handy when you were under the age of 15. And I'm just going to give it a thumbs up. If you're a lady, just love your man through it, because really that's the whole purpose of what's going to have to happen. I mean, if there's anyone else, I don't know. If it's a kid, I'm sorry. This is what horror used to look like.
I'll echo some of that, the first half at least. It is a Guyver thumb up, but it's a Guyver pushing up through the body of another monster covered in gore and blood. It's a thumb up. So if you like that, like me, this is right in my wheelhouse. Do I think it's for everybody? Probably not. And I guess the original kind of reception it got proves that. But I think if you like these kind of 80s horror movies, if you like Reanimator, if you like the, we mentioned Society, it's well worth getting it. Also, I know this is coming out right around Christmas. If you're looking for a Christmas movie, the same year that Brian Usna was the director for this, he was also the director, writer, and producer for Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toymaker, my favorite Silent Night, Silent Night, Deadly Night movie.
I would give it a Guyver elbow with blade up. So I guess that's a thumbs up. I have a lot of fun with it. If anything, I was more apprehensive in how you all would receive the film. So like I if you're gonna like bring some friends and watch it, you may want to bring party favors of whatever that is, if it's drinks or smokes or whatever. I think that that could loosen people and lower some expectations. But I think it's fun. And I think if you can put yourself in the mindset of when you were, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, you're going to have a lot of fun with this film. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it. And I want to find the R-rated version because I want to see that extra gore personally.
Yeah, I would give it that little antenna he has on top of his head going up.
Yeah.
That'd be my rating for it.
I'm snorting behind you right now. My vent just went off, Chris, because you said that. I just thought I'd tell you. My eyes shifted ever so slightly and my vent went off.
I'm uncomfortable.
This is easily the highest rated movie we've done in our own rating system, and probably the lowest rated movie as far as actual ratings go. So that's where we're at, but I love it.
That's amazing.
That is actually true. I think I got like a 4.5 on IMDb, and here we are giving it 4 thumbs up all the way around.
It's a solid, yeah, we all were like, oh, it's the best thing that's ever been filmed. Everyone's like, what am I listening to?
And I think we should every aspect of uncomfortability that you could possibly have. I'm still snorting. And my little eyes have just shifted ever so slightly. I'm ready. I'm in combat mode.
But I think you're right, James, about this movie is you got to go in with, I wouldn't say lowered expectations, just the right expectations.
Right.
In fact, I want to read something real fast. I was telling you this morning I was watching this movie and you said, embrace your 13-year-old Chris for optimized viewing. Very true statement.
Yep.
You have to go into this saying to yourself, have a kid's mindset to it. I mean,
for sure.
I mean, there are no fart jokes, but you got to love fart jokes kind of thing. We got your humor's got to be brought down a little bit. Enjoy it. Embrace it. And if you have a bunch of friends, have that plate of nachos and a bunch of beers, and you're going to have a great time.
Chris, you and I knew each other and would have hung out watching movies the time this came out. I cannot understand how we did not watch this specifically.
Yeah, you used to have sleepovers with like tons of people over. How was this movie not playing in the background?
I know. Well, you know. Everyone was also trying to get whatever was on Skinamax that night. So it mixed it up here and there.
That are playing River City Ransom all night long.
Now, I actually did have a friend. We all had that one friend who had a super rich, you know, growing up. And he had a whole game room in his basement. And I did stay the night over with a bunch of the guys. We did watch this on his big laser disc. And it was amazing. It was so cool because we were also playing the Russia. He had a little, I mean, he was the only kid, but he had the actual full-size hockey game of Russia versus America.
And for our younger listeners, a Laserdisc was a way to watch movies on a record player.
Get them. This is funny. Don't ever talk to me about age at that point.
So before we leave for the evening, guys, I do have one piece of mailbag, and I'd love to get everyone's reaction, including yours, James, if you want to jump in for that.
Sure.
It goes, great episode. I think Fergal might need some counseling after Cemetery Man.
Yes, I don't disagree. Yes, I'm actually currently in counseling because Del Morte was so unusual. So, yes, I appreciate that advice. I've taken better health along the way as well.
James, thanks again for joining us tonight. I think this was a great pick. I really do. And so where can people find you outside the show?
Yeah, I mean, I'm James Dean, which, you know, it's so easy to find that on on Facebook. I don't spend a whole lot of time on X anymore. At JamesD7004, I just signed up for Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what my handle is just yet. Okay, on Instagram, I am at monster_kids_productions. And the reason I said it that way is because I'm not 100% sure that's it. Yes, I was correct. monster_kid_productions. But, you know, Facebook is where I'm most active, I would say. And or monsterkidfilms.com.
And I think you got a project coming out soon, don't you?
Yeah. So actually, with it being Christmas time, I will talk a little bit about the film we released last year. If you guys haven't seen it, I highly suggest, especially some of you might really enjoy it. It's called Triple Xmas. It's about basically Santa Claus loses his shit and starts killing people on a porn set. And it has everything you would expect. It has a lot of practical effects, a lot of practical kills. Some pretty gnarly ones, and it also has a lot of nudity, especially in the first half. So,
I mean, Santa kills on a porn set. I mean, stop right there. Can I get it on DVD? Is it on Google?
It's on Blu-ray. It's on Blu-ray. It's found a little bit of difficulty finding some streaming services just because it is slightly graphic.
But I would love to watch
it. It's you can stream it for free on Fossum TV. It's kind of the new Tubi. So Fossum, okay. It's an app you can download. It's free with commercials. You can rent it at newvillagevideo.com.
I'll surprise my wife. Instead of Christmas Story, we'll put this on.
You should. Don't invite the children around, though. I will say that.
I've got a 16-year-old, so I think part of the joke is getting all of them together.
We had a premiere, and one of the actors brought his 15-year-old stepdaughter, and I was like, dude, you know what this movie is. And then the other actor brought his grandma, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Proud of the work, man.
And we actually have a revenge thriller film, which is completely different, much more serious in tone, called Absolution. We'll be looking at that'll probably be coming out in spring. We're going to do a local premiere here January, February, and we just did a picture lock on it, so we're kind of in the process and also gearing up to start the next one. So yeah, it's busy. Yeah,
and I think you have a movie on Tubi right now. Don't you have like something about nuns?
Yeah. Fontaine and the Vengeful Nun Who Wouldn't Die. I fully wanted to embrace the very long 70s exploitation title. And it really is kind of a love letter to exploitation films. If you can't take exploitation films in general, probably don't watch it. Just giving you a heads up. There's a graphic matter in it. That was our first film. It took us a while to get that one finished. And I will forever love it. It's not perfect, but it's a fun film. It's about a nun chasing down corrupt clergy, Nazis, and gang members with a katana, and she has an eye patch. It's an exploitation film, 100%.
I have seen it, so it that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I appreciate you watching it, Chris.
No problem. And Jeremy, where can people find you?
I'm always available at retrovania.net, where all things Retrovania is held. I'm actually going to go find XXXmas to watch this evening.
Yeah, I hope you have fun with it.
And Fergal?
Well, I won't get to watch these movies this evening, but I definitely think I'd like to see the exploitation movie, just because I love Black Dynamite and every other movie along that way. So, you can find me on Facebook. We're still kind of working our way through. We do a lot of individual comic buying at this present moment, so we're definitely doing a lot of that. So if you want to get your books valued, really get an honest, fair price, get an opportunity to see where you look at, come give me a call on Facebook, Gotham Night Comics, and check us out.
Awesome. And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture. And I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us today. And if you have any thoughts about the Guyver and how James knows far more than I do about movie making, send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Oh, I'm interrupting. Sorry, I'll go.